Okay, so we're up to Perek Gimel, Pasuk Gimel, maybe a little bit farther, but we'll go back to there. So this story is primarily the two famous stories, which are really one story with two parts, of Shlomo being granted wisdom, and then the subsequent trial of the two women, which is evidence of his wisdom. So it starts in Pasuk Gimel, where it says, "Vayehav Shlomo et Adonai lech v'chukot David aviv, rak b'mavot hu mezabeach hu maktir." Right? So Shlomo loved God, and he followed the ways of David, but he still brought on the b'mavot, and we mentioned already last week this ambiguity, that on the one hand, the Pasuk is sort of implying that what he did was wrong, was that he was allowing people to bring on the Bamot outside of the Beit HaMikdash. On the other hand, the Beit HaMikdash hasn't been built yet, so it's not actually wrong. And that seems to be intentional ambiguity, indicating that even though now he's perfect, there's something wrong, which is last week's share, but we'll leave that for now. And then he goes to Giv'on, because that's where the big Bama is, and he brings 1,000 Korbanot on that Mizbeach. Now, again, this is sort of ambiguous. On the one hand, you might say, well, he's bringing in a Bama, which isn't really a good, you know, a great thing. But the simple read here is that this is a very good thing. And not only is he bringing in a Bama, but he's bringing what sounds like the centralized Bama. Right? HaBama HaGdola. Which means that he's already inching the Jews towards the Beit HaMikdash. I mean, until now, everyone had their private Mizbeach. So even though there is a Mizbeach in the Mishkan, still Giv'on has the centralized one, and he's showing that there's this value to centralization. And as he does that, I mean, as he begins the process towards the Beit HaMikdash, he starts to centralize religious authority. So B'Giv'on yirah Adonai el Shlomo b'chalom halayla v'yomer Elohim sha'al me'atein lach. So now Hashem sees that he's beginning the process.
What happened to Givon before? It sounds so familiar.
Is with
Givonim. What happened?
So the Givonim in Yoshua were the ones who tripped. Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, this is one of Meir's favorite stories in Yoshua, because it's so much fun. It's like, you know, Yoshua is a lot of fun for little kids. They're like, So in Givon, right, as he's beginning the process.
Did he know already that he's going to build the Beit HaMikdash at this stage?
Oh,
not yet.
He seems like he does know, right? Because that was part of David's, right? When David.
He didn't learn it together.
No. It's in when David asks in Sefer Shmuel, when he asks Hashem, "Can I build the Beit HaMikdash?" Hashem says, "No, your son will." So that seems to be part of the. Everybody knows. Whoever takes over for David is going to fulfill that destiny
but
David. No, it's not mentioned here. Right.
David told Shlomo.
Right, which is one of the ironies, right? It doesn't David doesn't even mention it. It seems to be just assumed. Right? Shlomo is clearly starting to go in that direction, but no one tells him. So Hashem likes what's going on. So he says, "Whatever you want, right? Whatever you want is yours." So Vayomer Shlomo. So Shlomo says to him, "Ata asitam avdecha David avid chesed gadol kasher alach lefanecha bemet uvitztaka uvishrat levavimach. You did well. You were really kind to my father because he followed your ways. But tishmar lo et chesed gadol hazeh. So because he was kind to you, right? He followed the right way, so you were kind in return. But titen lo ven yoshev al kiso kayom hazeh. You have given him a son to sit on his throne today." Now, Chazal have many midrashim picking up on the implications here, that Shlomo is very aware of the fact that he is only king because of David, and that he is David's son. Right? That is, this is not midrash. Right? The midrash builds on this and says that when he gets into the Beit HaMikdash, right, the doors don't want to open until he says, "Do it in the schut of David." Different midrashim point to this, but the pshat of the psukim is that Shlomo is very, very aware of the fact that his entire claim to the throne is as David's heir in every sense of the word, is his obviously his actual physical heir, but also his spiritual heir. So, and that becomes clear from the next word, right? Ve'ata, right? Ata is, right, as they say in the Dat Mikra, it's Lashon Hasakat Masakanot Min Hadibur Shelofanav, right? It's a deductive statement, right? It's in light of the above, this is what I'm going to say. So, because I know that I am only here because my father was a tzaddik, and you let him be king because he was tzaddik, and you ensured he'd have a dynasty because of that, and I am, therefore, the one manifesting that destiny. V'ata, Adonai Elohai, ata himlach that avdecha tachat David avi. Vanochi Narakaton, Lo Egdat Seit Vavo. Said, I get it. I'm supposed to be king because I'm David's son, but I'm a kid, and I have no idea what I'm doing. Right? I have no clue. Right? Lo Egdat Seit Vavo technically means I don't know how to go to war. Right? I what am I going to do? Right? David was this warrior.
You were right. He was 12 years old. And he became king. So
right. So now he'd be a few years older. It's a few years later. But, you know, according to Chazal's calculation, he's probably about 15 now. But either way, right, he is. And now, Seit Vilavo is the, right, he's playing on a pasuk, right? This is not random, right?
Last week's parasha,
exactly. When Moshe says you need a leader, it's someone who knows how to be Seit Vilavo, right? It's Yivkod Hashem Elohei Ruchol L'chol Basar Ish Alayda Asher Yitzeh Lefnehem Asher Avo Lefnehem Asher Yotzeim Asher Yiveim. Right, thank God for Dot Mikra, where it just quotes everything right here.
I know, I don't have Dot Mikra.
But you're a Balkari. And he said, I have no idea what I'm, like he said, I just don't know what I'm doing. Like, or more specifically, I don't know how to lead. V'avdecha b'toch amcha asher b'charta. I'm Rav asher lo yimaneh v'lo yisafer meirov. And now, I'm b'toch amcha, right? B'toch amcha means I'm just one of the normal people. I'm just one of the guys, right? I'm one of these great nation, which is not countable. So, and I think I mentioned this at some point. This is the climax of Tanakh, like this pasuk. And this is the only time in all of Tanakh that the Jews are described as not countable. And Avram is promised that they would be not countable. That never happens except for right here. This is literally the only time. And this is, that's why when the later Nevi'im talk about Mashiach, the reason that the model is always Shlomo, and they're always drawing a line from Shlomo, is because he is supposed to be the Messianic king. Right? This is the fulfillment of Avram's destiny.
Mashiach and David.
Right, but it's specifically from Shlomo, and right, Shlomo should be, right, really should be literally Mashiach ben David. I mean, he is. He's Mashiach Hashem ben David. So he turns to God and he says, look, right, you can just imagine sort of the drama here. He said, we have reached the climax of Jewish history, and it all comes down to a 15-year-old boy. Like, this is really, okay. This is a really a lot.
Finishing something else. So he's dreaming.
Yeah.
So he's talking to God.
In a dream. In a dream, yeah. So according to the Rambam, this is just a dream. It's not real nevuah. According to other Rishonim, this is actual nevuah. But whatever exactly he's doing, and the psukim will...
But his answer, even though he was sleeping, was accepted by God.
Yeah, and well, the pasuk can draw attention to the fact that he's going to wake up and realize that this is some sort of prophetic or quasi-prophetic dream. So he says to God, look, I don't know what I'm doing, right? Like, everything comes down to this 15-year-old boy where Vinatata of the Khalif Shomelish Bodad Amcha, Lavin Bain Tov Larak, Kimi Yuchalish Bod Amcha Kaverazes. So do me a favor, give me wisdom, specifically Lavin Bain Tov Larak, to understand the difference between good and evil. Meaning, allow me to judge. Because who could judge this people? Vaitava Davar Bene Adonai, Kishal Shlomo Davar Azeh, and Hashem was thrilled that God, that Shlomo asked for this. Vayomer Elohim Elav, Yana Sher Sha'alta Davar Azeh, Velo Sha'alta Lecha Yamim Rabim, Velo Sha'alta Chala Osher, Velo Sha'alta Nefesh Oyvecha, Velo Sha'alta Lecha Avin Lishmo Mishpat. Since you didn't ask, you asked for this, and not for long life, and not for wealth, and not to conquer your enemies, you want a heart to understand how to judge. So I'll give you exactly you want. And he named Atadil Chalev Chacham Vinavon, Asher Kamocha Lo Hayalefanecha Vacharecha Lo Yakum Gamocha. And not only that, but you are going to be the smartest, right? No one before you and no one after you. Vigam Asher Lo Sha'alta Natati Lach. And what you didn't ask me, I'm giving you also. Gam Osher Gam Kavod. I'm giving you wealth, I'm giving you honor. Shelo Yachamocha Ish Melachem Koyamecha. Like no one else. Vim Telech Vidrachai. But it's conditional. If you follow my Torah, lishmor chukai mitzvotai, kasher lach David avicha, varachti av yamecha. So this is interesting because he's explicit. His long life is dependent on his doing the right thing. His wealth, power, and wisdom is not. Right? He splits it. Right? You'll live long if you're good, but the rest of it, it sounds like, is unconditional, presumably because that's necessary to fulfill his promise to David. Right? Because David... You know, and now by Kaf Shlomo v'nei Chalom, he wakes up, and it's a Chalom. By Vo Yerushalayim, and he comes to Yerushalayim. And now by Kaf Shlomo means he realizes it's more than a dream, right? It's not just a dream. It's a there's a truth to the dream, right? The Radak says, Rashi says, he understood that it was true, it was prophetic. And so he brings Karban out. Now, so here, what? So that's in the Mishkan, right? He goes to the Mishkan again, right? The Mishkan's in Givon rather, and the Aron's in Yerushalayim, right? Because Aron was brought to Yerushalayim by David. It's just been sitting there, right?
In a tent.
Right, for
what he brought back from the Pishtim.
Yeah, exactly. He's been sitting there for years.
Did the Yavusi have it?
He bought it from Aravna Yavusi.
No, but the Pishtim didn't have it. No, the Pishtim.
The Pishtim had it.
They sent it.
And then it went to Beit Shemesh. And then from Beit Shemesh, eventually, David got it to Yerushalayim. It's been sitting in Yerushalayim for a while. Now, these psukim are famous, but they're really problematic for many reasons. First of all, and this is, I already hinted at this last week. You read these psukim, and at first glance, everything sounds amazing, right? Like Shlomo, he had the genie's lamp. He said, "What do you want? You get one wish, and well, really infinite wish. He didn't tell him how many wishes he got, right? He gets a wish, and he asks for wisdom, right? And Hashem is so happy. He didn't ask for wealth. He didn't ask for everything, and he says, I'm so happy, I'm going to give you everything. And you read this, and you're like, oh, Shlomo is just the best person ever. He was offered whatever he wanted, and all he wants is wisdom. But, you know, like we mentioned last week, if Shlomo is totally, totally perfect right now, he's pretty good, but if he's really perfect, then Perek Yud Aleph is really confusing, because in Perek Yud Aleph, just everything collapses. And that's why you have to look, and I'll summarize last week's point very quickly, is that right, Angel's basic thesis of Shlomo is that the psukim are written like a porcupine. That if you read it forward, it sounds smooth, but there are little hints that there are problems, and when you get to Yud Aleph and you realize that everything collapses, you have to look back and realize that there were things that were hinting to you that not everything was perfect, but it didn't tell you that yet. So here you get the same problem. Bazak has a share where he notes that that's what's going on in this story, because there's a few key problems here that hint that not everything is so perfect. So, for example, Lahavin Bein Tov Lara. Right? He said, I want to know Bein Tov Lara, which literally means, right, I want to be able to know good and bad, meaning I want to be able to judge. The problem is the words Lahavin Bein Tov Lara are very specific, and they are from Reshit. Right? That Adam, his ultimate sin was he wanted to eat from the Eitz Hadaat Tov Lara because, as the Nachash said, he wanted to be God. Right, so Shlomo is saying, I want to be God. That's actually what he's saying, right? He's saying, yeah, I want to judge, but he's saying, I want to be God. And Chazal actually have a midrash where they pick up on this, because they say on the next story that he judges without a bezdin for the right the zonot, and they say the only person who can judge yechidi is God. Right? How did he know he got it right? Maybe they were ma'arim. Right, maybe they were being deceptive.
Tomorrow today, Saf Yomi, they say one judge can judge. Why is it so?
Right, Yachid Mumche, right. But it's not a great thing. Normally we say, right, you know, maybe it's Mechutzaf, and it's under certain circumstances, and it's not in capital cases, right, for sure not, right? And Rav Bazak points out, well, this image actually continues, because the next story of the Zonot with the two babies, he actually acts like God, meaning he doesn't actually kill the baby, but the images in the Tanakh of God are that life and death are in his hands. And Shlomo literally wants to be Yodea Tov V'Ra and have life in his hands based on his knowledge of Tov V'Ra. He wants to be in control of good and bad and life. Like, he is clearly, he has a God complex, right? Now, he's really good, but the Tanakh is already hinting to you that he's overreaching. And, right, the next words, Ki mi yuchal lishpot amcha kavedazeh, who can judge these people? Now, someone else asked that exact same question. Which
Moshe.
Moshe. And Moshe's answer was, I can't do it. When Yitro said, you can't keep doing this, I said, you're right. Right? I'm not capable of doing this. And Moshe, both ways. Moshe said, the reason I judge everybody by myself is because they're coming to me. Why? Not because I'm wise, but because they want to know what God said. And then when Yitro says, that's true, but you can tell them what God said by setting up another court, he agrees. So both when he has everyone coming to him, he's not trying to act like God, he's trying to be the conduit to God, and he also realizes that no one can really judge by themselves and therefore sets up a court. Shlomo is in the same position and says, no one person can do it, so unless you make me God, right? Unless you allow me to be Yodea Ben Tov L'ra, so then I'll be able to do it. So on the one hand, yeah, it's great that he wants wisdom, he wants to be able to judge, but he's overreaching a bit. And right, there is this word, right, that hints to another story, right? It pasuk tedvav, when he wakes up from the dream, vayikach Shlomo v'inei chalom, is also borrowed from another
Yaakov.
Story. What?
Yaakov.
So Yaakov and
Yosef,
and well, yeah, Yosef and Paro, right? Meaning it's bringing you back to the Yosef Paro stories, which makes sense because Yosef is the other person who is super powerful, who is known for his wisdom, who uses his wisdom to bring power, to bring wealth. Yosef and Shlomo have a lot in common, except Yosef also, when he's asked, how are you so smart? He says, it's not me, right? Right? Hashem will be able to interpret the dream of Paro. Right? Shlomo doesn't ever say that. He asks God to give him the wisdom. Right? So Rav Bazak points out, yeah, sure, it's good, but it's not perfect. He has a God complex, and that's going to be a problem. And Chazal note that, because Chazal, when they look for his downfall, they say, why did he end up failing? Because he said, only normal people have to worry about too many wives and too much money and too many horses. I don't need to because I'm so smart. I know the reason behind the mitzvah. And the answer is no, you don't, right? You can't, you're still human. You can't just get around it. And you see that, right, overconfidence in his own wisdom, that even though he's really good, he's only asking for that, right? You can understand how that type of attitude could lead to hubris that could be really dangerous down the road. So you see those same seeds. And as the next story, which, you know, it becomes really famous, which is like the example of how smart Shlomo was and how great he was with, you know, figuring out the story with the babies, isn't mentioned in Divrei Hayamim. Now, Divrei Hayamim leaves out all the bad things about Shlomo, only talks about all the good things. So Rav Bazak also notes, well, why would you leave out that story? Isn't that Shlomo's heroic moment? And the answer is, not really, right? It's great, but it's Shlomo, that's self-aggrandizement. He's just, sure, I'm God. I can do whatever I want, right? And I can judge by myself. It's not terrible, but if you're trying to tell a perfectly innocent story of Shlomo, it doesn't get in there. So again, this is one of those stories where it sounds really good at the beginning, but if you see the hubris at the end of the story and you want to figure out where it came from, you'll suddenly notice that, well, it's sort of staring you in the face here where he wants to be the Yodea Tov V'ra. He wants to judge the whole people by himself, which is exactly what Moshe and turned down, what Yosef ascribed to God, and he's trying to be Adam, right? Which is a problem. He's trying to be Elohim Yodei Tov V'ra. And that background leads into the story. Right, so, Az Tavona Shtaim Nashim Zonot. Yeah.
Is Shiloh's what time?
What? It's 8:30. Huh? That balance. Right, so he said, Az Tavona Shtaim Nashim Zonot El HaMelech. So now the story happens. Now, what I want to try to do, hopefully we'll finish it, I don't know, is try to figure out, how does Shlomo know? How is he going to figure out whose kid is whose? And there's we'll see. It's a two zonot come to him. Now, why is that important? For many reasons. On the positive side for Shlomo, the fact that he, right, let's talk positively about Shlomo for a minute, right? Because, as I said, he still is pretty good. It's just there are hints of badness. But the fact that two zonot come into him is really important because, as he said, his goal in life is to be a judge, is to bring justice to the people. Now, this story indicates that who is he bringing justice to? Everybody, right? Because you have a story where two prostitutes just walk into his house and no one stops them. Like, there's no problem. Like, no one bats an eye. It's just, yeah, two women just walked into the king. Like, he clearly, he at least put his money where, right, where his mouth was, and he said, yeah, I want to judge. I want to bring justice to your people. That means all your people, at all times, no matter who they are, they have direct access to the king. It's also important that there's no note because, as they're going to say, no one else was home during this whole story, which makes sense. They're not married, right? They are. Right? These are probably the children of prostitutes. They don't know who the fathers are. No one's around, which is how this story even happens. So, Vatomer Isha Achat Bi Adoni. And Eva Isha Azot Yoshvot Bavayet Echad Ve'ileit Ima Babayet. So the woman comes in and says, me and her, we were sitting in the house and you know, we had a child. So, I had a baby, and then she had a baby on day three. V'anachnu yachdav. We were together in the house. V'ein zari tanu b'bayit. Zulat yishtayim anachnu b'bayit. There's no one else home. V'yamat ben ha'isha hazot layla sher shachva alav. And this woman, her child, died because she smothered him when she was sleeping. Right, they were co-sleeping, and she smothered him. That's right. That sounds like what's happening in the story, or the child just dies, but presumably actually was caused to die by sleeping together. Right. So it sounds like it's not just It sounds like she's partially racked with guilt, so she gets up in the night and she takes my son. I was sleeping. And she switches the children. V'akum baboker le'nigit b'nis. So I got up in the morning to nurse my child. V'hine meit. And he was dead. V'adbonene lav baboker. V'hine lo yavini asher yalati. And I looked and I said, it's not my son. V'atomrei sha'acher. The other woman said, lo ki v'ni achayu v'nei chameit. My son's alive and yours is dead. V'zodo meret lo ki v'nei chameitu v'ni achay. And the other one said, no, your child is dead and mine's alive. They bring the case before the king. And Chazal learned from here that you're supposed to repeat the claims just to make sure you have everything clear. Right? Just so we're clear. You say it's your son. She says it's her son. Okay. So now all Mefarshim look at the story and say, okay, before we get to Shlomo's answer, can you figure out who is the liar? Right? If you just looked at this story, right? Who is who? Because the psukim won't tell you; they'll just say that he figures it out. But which one is the mother and which one isn't? Right? Is it the first one speaking or the second one speaking?
If you look at the story, the first one speaking is the mother. If you look at this story.
So why? Why do you think the first one, not the second?
She could tell there was
another
child.
She was,
right. So some people, so this is the fun thing about the Mefarshim, right? Is that, each of them, there are many Mefarshim who say, well, Shlomo isn't that smart because we can figure it out too from reading the story. The problem is that they then argue about which one it is. So some of the Mefarshim say, yeah, it's the first woman. How do you know it's the first woman? So they say, well, she's articulate, right? She's not just yelling, right? She's telling the whole story, right? She is articulate. She's well argued. She clearly has the truth.
She saw that it's not her.
Right? She has the whole story, and she's telling the truth. And the other one is just yelling. On the other hand, some people saying no. It's obviously the second one, because, right? You know this, Jeremy.
She's emotional.
Well, so some say no. It's the second one because the first one's just too calm.
Too polished.
Right? Right? Too polished. Her son just died, right? And she has a whole argument. And they note something else. Right? Jeremy, you should be able to figure this out as a lawyer,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, a lawyer. Otherwise, it won't come.
Right?
So what?
Right?
Can you figure it out?
Some of them are saying, no, there's a real problem with the first one, which is, right? How does she know? Yeah, it's too good, meaning she actually can't know that, right? Right, she's saying, oh, her son died in the middle of the night because she smothered it while sleeping, and she snuck in the middle of the night. How do you know that? You were sleeping. By your own testimony, you were asleep. How do you know how her son died? Right? The other one who just says, look, I don't know what happened. All I know is that my son was alive and your son wasn't. Right? So some of the first ones saying, no. The first one, who's so polished, she's so polished that she must be lying because half her story happened by her own testimony when she wasn't there. So how does she know?
But how does the second one know, though, that, no, mine was alive, but yours is dead? Meaning that...
But one of them is dead.
No, but the problem is, right, all she can say, if she testified saying, all I know is that my son was alive, that's it. I don't know what's going on with anything else. That makes more sense.
Right,
once
and that's
already saying that the other one is already dead, right?
Right, and that's yet a third machlokas that Mefarshim have, which another axis is they say if you look at Pasuk Chavet again, right, the first, the second woman had said, "V'tomri sha'acheret lo kivini achai uvenei chameit." Right, the second one, all she says is, "My son is alive," right? So yours must be the dead one, right? Now, some bring that as a proof that the second woman is the one telling the truth for two reasons. One is what Jeremy said, which is all she knows is that her son's alive. She doesn't pretend to know anything more about the story. There's a second thing, which is, as we know from Shlomo, what Shlomo is going to say is, right, he's going to give the child to the one who cares about letting the child live. So some of them in Farshim say, yeah, well, emotionally, one of them cares more about the fact that Bini Hachai. The other one cares about, no, Ki Vinei Chameit. All she wants is that the other one's child should be dead, right? How do we know? Because what's Shlomo's solution going to be?
Kill it.
Kill it, and she's going to be like, that's fine. I don't really care about my son being alive. I care about your son being dead, right? So half the Mefarshim say, well, of the Mefarshim who assume that you're able to tell from this story, half of them say it's obviously the first woman who is polished and who has a story and is cogent. Half of the Mefarshim say, no, it's obviously the second one because how could you be that calm if your son just died? And besides, how do you know? You're lying through your teeth. By your own testimony, you were asleep. How do you know this whole story? Only the person who can say, I don't know what happened, I just know that my son's alive, is the one telling the truth. Now, the third group of Mefarshim say, and the moderns, this is like a very modern thing, a lot of the modern articles say, well, yeah, that's exactly why Shlomo's so smart, because I can construct an equally compelling argument why it absolutely must be the first and why it absolutely must be the second. That's why Shlomo was able to figure this out. That's the point of the story, that Shlomo is really smart, right? Because, you know, here they both, there's good reason to believe that it's the first and good reason to believe that it's the second. Now, the Radbaz is a tshuva where he goes farther. He said, maybe there's more to it. Maybe Shlomo also looked at their faces and tried to figure out who do they look at
the face,
right? Who does the baby look like more? And you know, all types of different
3 days old. But what he could have done is a DNA test.
Right. So the Mefarshim, you know, so the Radbaz tries to bring up all those other things, and many of the Mefarshim try to bring different things, saying, oh yeah, he already knew what was happening. Now, what's common to all of those positions is that the test now isn't to prove who the mother is. It's to prove to everybody else that he knows who the mother is. I mean, he already knows who the mother is going in, right? The story of the sword isn't meant to prove who the mother is. The story of the sword is meant to prove to everybody else that he got it right. Now, some people say maybe that's not even what's going on. Maybe Shlomo has absolutely no interest in figuring out who the mother is. He has an interest in figuring out who's better to raise this child, and he doesn't really care, right? He doesn't really care whether he gets it right or not. The one who wants the child to live should raise the child, mother or not mother. The one who wants the child dead should not raise the mother, mother or not mother, right? And he's not making a claim to know the truth, because what did he say? He's making a claim to know what's right, right? He always wants to do what's right, not necessarily what's true.
But how does the truth is he doesn't know what the reactions are going to be into the time.
Correct.
They could have both said, they could have both yelled and stopped and... Which
they both said kill him.
Correct. So the Midrash here picks up on what Jeremy said and criticizes him and says, how did he know? Right? I mean, this is all really nice, but maybe they're just good liars. Right? And that's why, so if you continue, Chazal, read it like this. Vayomer HaMelech, Kuli Cher, Vayaviu HaCher Lefnei HaMelech. So he said, give me a sword to bring him a sword. Vayomer HaMelech, Gazur HaGel HaChai L'Shnayim, V'tnu Ad Chatzi La'achat V'tchatzi La'achat. Now, technically, in the yeshiva world, they like quoting this Me'iri, that this is all a Yibum question, right? That this isn't two's no note, this is a mother-in-law and a daughter-in-law, and the daughter-in-law's husband died, and now there's a baby, and they're arguing about whether the baby is the mother's, and therefore the woman's husband died childless, and now has to marry the brother in 13 years, and,
okay,
you know...
Not really what the
no, not all what's going on, but they like quoting this, but... But he says, right, cut the child in half. Vatomer isha asher bina chai el hamelech, ki nichmeru rachamel baneam. Vatomer biadani, tinola rialura chai, vamed al timitehu. Vizodo merit, gamli valach lo ye, gozoru. So here you see it clearly, right, that what's important, according to the psukim, of who is the mother is whether they care more about the child being alive or about the other person not having a child.
We don't know if it's the first or the second one.
But we don't know if it's the first and the second. Anyway. And that's, right, so some of them try to read this back into the pasuk before, right, that saying this is the equivalent of saying, B'nei Achai B'nei Chamei, as opposed to B'nei Chamei to B'nei Achai. V'ayana melech v'yomar tenulara yelur achai v'amet lo timitehu, hi imo. So Chazal in the Midrash, which say what Jeremy said, is how do you know it's the mother? So Chazal said he doesn't. He said give it to her, and the Midrash said and the Batkol said he imo. Right, a Batkol came out from Shemayim and said that's the mother, but Shlomo in fact had no way of knowing. So one way of reading the Midrash is that Shlomo has no intention of figuring out the truth. He just says give it to the one who wants the child to live, and God says you're right, and he emo. The other way of reading it is a criticism of Shlomo. It's how do you know? Right, you lucked out there that you got that right, but maybe you got it wrong. Like, this is the celebration of your wisdom, but how did you know? Maybe they're just a good lawyer. And this comes back to that same problem with Shlomo, which is you never know whether the Pesukim are praising him totally or hiding criticism here. And like I said, on the one hand, sure, this proves that he was serious, that all he wanted to do was judge the Jewish people. And when he meant that, he meant even the lowest of society. He's going to help them. He's going to be there for them. He's going to let them come in. And maybe he really is this great judge, and he can sense nuances in their voices, and he can tell from their arguments, and he's sensitive to things. And not only that, but he knows what demonstration will prove to the world that he knows the truth, and he's great. On the other hand, he is trying to be Yodea Tova Ra. He doesn't have a Beis Din with him. He breaks every rule of testimony that you need. There's no witnesses, right? There's no nothing. He comes up with this test. He rules on it. You have no idea if the pasuk didn't tell you that he was right. You just have no idea. Everyone assumes he's right, right? And he literally has, Chaim Vamavit is in his hands, right? He's like, he has this God complex. See, this is the complexity of Shlomo. On the one hand, yeah, he's really, really great. On the other hand, you do sort of feel like there's this God complex that's just waiting to explode. And that's the sort of inherent problem with Shlomo, that he's really, really good. And the Pesukim want you to feel that he's good, but they don't want you to wake up in Perek Yud Aleph and say, how did we get here? Right? Because, yeah, if suddenly in Perek Yud Aleph you see someone who the Pesukim describe as this, overreaching, arrogant king, I mean, yes, right? He starts off, and you say, I mean, it's hard to blame him, right? He's a 15-year-old, or whatever he is now, right? I mean, he was like 12 when he became king, now he's 15. God grants him wisdom beyond everybody else, and yeah, it's pretty hard not to, let it get to your head. But on the other hand, if it does get to your head, that's going to cause problems. Now, just parenthetically, the question of what it actually means that he was the wisest of all people, I mean, the pasuk actually never says that, right? It says...
Nobody before or after.
Yeah. Right, so here's the problem. The Rambam has a real problem with this, because the Rambam believes that nevuah is a function of intellectual perfection. So the Rambam has to believe philosophically that Moshe is the smartest person ever, because the Pesukim tell you that Moshe is the greatest Navi. So it just can't be that Shlomo is the smartest person ever. So because of that, he limits this extremely, and a lot of Rishonim really do follow him in different ways. Some of them are more compelling than others. Now, some Mefarshim really think, no, what this means is he's the smartest person ever, period, end of story. And some of the Midrashim really go in that direction, right? That he can speak to animals, and he can speak to demons, and he knows what's going on in heaven, and he's just the smartest person ever. But the Rambam notes that, I'll just summarize what all the different Mefarshim suggest. On the one hand, it doesn't actually say he's the smartest person ever. It says that before and after him, which can either mean since the beginning of time until the end of time, or it can mean, like, in remembered history in both directions. In anybody's lifetime in both directions, right? Like, anybody that has been alive, like the previous generation or in the next generation, no one will be alive now who sees you who will see somebody smarter. It doesn't mean that you're the smartest person ever. It means that, for all intents and purposes, you are the smartest person before, at your time, right?
The doesn't say that.
Well, that's a very limited read of before you and after you. That's not really true. Yeah. The other one, which I find much more compelling, is God doesn't say he's going to make him the smartest person ever. He says, I'm going to give you what you wanted, which was, I want to be the smartest in terms of judging. Like, I want to be a really discerning judge. And Hashem says, sure, you can get that, right? Like, you'll be the smartest judge. Like, that I'll give you. I'll give you political knowledge. I'll give you judicial knowledge. It doesn't mean that you're the best philosopher.
Jeremy, sorry. You know the
problem. Right, right. So a lot of them, of course, are going this direction, that Shlomo is, in fact, the greatest politician and the greatest and the greatest lawyer and statesman. Like, all of that, sure. But Nevuah depends on philosophical knowledge, the ability to understand God. That, not necessarily. Other people say, no, it's true Moshe was the greatest Navi, but who says Nevuah is about being smart? Nevuah is about being good. It's about being, you know, close to God. But the Rambam's theology doesn't allow that, but other Mepharshim have no problem with that whatsoever.
But he was also, Moshe was also the shofet in the sense
that... Right, the Moshe, also the shofet, right.
Right. So
now, of course, and this comes back to what we mentioned, though, that Moshe is the shofet through God. Shlomo wants to be the shofet through himself.
Right.
Right, so he's the most independently wise. That doesn't mean he is, you know, has the best decisions necessarily, But
also, Pasuk doesn't say Chochmah.
It says
Lev Chacham.
Right, Lev Chacham V'Navon.
Right,
which is discerning. Right, you'll be the most discerning. Right, which may be what it means. Right, you're not the smartest person ever. You're the most discerning person. You're the most judicial person. So you could read this that he's the smartest person ever. You could say like the Rambam is just like in his vicinity of times. What I think the most likely, you know, compromise position is I think this is the Radak. Is that no? He's the smartest in this sense. Like that's what he asked for. He asked to be able to judge people, and Hashem says, okay, you want to be the smartest judge. You want to be able to judge people. I'll give that to you. And in that sense, sure. The pasuk Chav Chet tells you, "Vayishmu chol Yisrael et hamishpat asher shafar hamelech, vayiru mipnei hamelech, ki ra'u ki chachmat Elohim bikirbo, la'asot mishpat." So here you have two. What I think are fascinating things in this last pasuk. One, and this is what, you know, following in Rav Batzak's direction, I'm not sure he actually makes this point, is that it's conspicuous. Shlomo doesn't say that he's smart because God made him smart. Everybody else sees that Chochmat Elohim Bikirbo, which is what happened with Yosef. But Shlomo never admits to it. Right? Yosef, Paro says, look, there's no one smarter than him who has the wisdom of God in him. But how did he know that the wisdom of God was in him? Because Yosef said, everything I do is from God. It's conspicuous here that everyone else realizes that Shlomo got his wisdom from God, but Shlomo doesn't say that, right? So it's almost drawing your, right? You first read it and you're like, oh, that's great. Everyone sees that God's in him. And then you read it again, you're like, wait a second. Everyone else saw that it was God, but unlike Yosef, who made a point of saying, yeah, it's only God, it's not me, Shlomo says nothing. And Shlomo doesn't tell you that. And the other point is the La'asot Mishpat, is that his wisdom is specifically that he's able to do Mishpat. That doesn't mean he's the smartest person ever. It means he's the smartest person at Mishpat. He's capable of doing Mishpat. So again, this parak is, like I said, very famous, and everyone thinks of it as, you know, the pinnacle of Shlomo. On the other hand, there are all these hints that even though, sure, Shlomo is good, he wants to judge, he's judging people, and that's good, is that he does have this certain God complex. He doesn't acknowledge God enough, and that may explain some of his downfall later, and some of the Midrashims really do start pointing in that direction, and that may be why this story is totally left out from Divrei Hayomim, which is painting a much rosier picture than we have in Malachim. So, you know, it's a story which, you know, is often misunderstood because people are only looking for the good. And what we'll see, not for a while, in a few prakim though, is that it's not just that Hashem is going to give him wisdom plus wealth plus power, right? When it's that Shlomo is going to end up using his knowledge as a vehicle, not just for judgment, but for power. And that's going to be a problem. Because, right, that's what you see with Malkut Shva. She comes to see how smart he is and brings gifts. So on the one hand, you might say, oh, look, that's great. He's showing off his godly wisdom. On the other hand, right, you're going to have to wonder, wait a second. He wanted wisdom to judge. not wealth. Hashem promised he would get wealth, but instead of getting wealth, he uses his wisdom to impress people who then give him presents.
He did enough for the presents.
Correct, but it's sort of, again, it feeds into that picture where Shlomo is this person who, you know, everybody's just praising him for his wisdom and, you know, and showering him with wealth. You understand how this starts to get to his head, right? Is that, so again, Perek Gimel is yet another instance where, on the one hand, you read it forwards, Shlomo is amazing. When you read it with a bit more of a discerning eye, you've got to wonder, right, to what extent is he really overreaching? To what extent does he think he's smarter than he is? Or, even if he is as smart as he thinks he is he lacking because he never mentions that it's from God when everyone else seems to recognize from God, but he conspicuously never says it. Okay, so that's Perek Gimel. Perek Dalet opens with Shlomo's bureaucracy, which, while at first glance is really boring to list all the names, and we can go through it pretty quickly, it's actually very interesting because the Navi hints at a lot of things in the story, but it doesn't say sort of, you know, openly. Okay.